Lasso. This morning we return to awareness of awareness. And the fundamental task in such practice is to shed light where there was previously darkness. Speaking now from the Dzogchen perspective, the emergence of samsara, the emergence of life as we know it, is said to begin in the substrate, the experience of the substrate, which is a blank, unthinking void, a vacuity, a sheer emptiness. It is of the nature of marigpa, avidya, not rigpa, not knowing, unawareness. And so it's when all that is present in experience is just the substrate, one can ask, what does it obscure? And it obscures rigpa, the seen awareness. It obscures your deepest nature, one's own deepest nature. It obscures it in a field of unknowing. And since the very nature of the substrate, the alaya, is one of unknowing, it has no beginning, because to posit the existence of anything implies, in the Buddhist context, in Buddhist epistemology, that it must be fit to be known, it must be knowable. But since the very nature of the substrate is unknowing, then the beginning of the unknowing is unknowable because it's unknowing. Therefore, samsara has no beginning. Ignorance has no beginning because it doesn't know when it begins, because it doesn't know anything. Out of the substrate emerges the substrate consciousness. A consciousness of the substrate. And there's this a sense, a very opaque, a very subliminal, indistinct sense of differentiation of the substrate, this vacuity, being there, and the substrate consciousness being here. Very ill-defined, undefined. But there is some luminosity, because the very nature of substrate consciousness is it is luminous. And then that's catalyzed, and out of that emerges what is called klishtamana in Sanskrit, afflictive cognition. It's afflictive because now what's about to emerge is the root of all mental afflictions. And that is a type of coagulation of a sense of I am, a gathering, a congealing, a drawing together, almost like a freezing of a sense of me in here. And out of this klishtamana, this afflictive cognition, some kind of an embryonic sense of I am, then out of that arise manas, mental cognition. And together with that, appearances. Appearances begin to manifest, and this manas, or mental cognition, then differentiates appearances and begins to make objects. Objects and subjects. And then all of samsara happens. And that is craving, hostility, wholesome and unwholesome, the whole cycle carries on from there. Now, this whole process throughout the course of a life comes to a grand finale. When you come to the culmination of the dying process, and you come to what is called in Tibetan Toba Nyerlamba, this close achievement of darkness. And it's where your mind gradually is shutting down in the dying process. It's being reduced. It's going primal. And finally, when you come to the death point, that is, you're dying, dead, you finally come to the termination, the culmination of the dying process. That's when everything is collapsed into the alaya, and you're back where you started, into a state of unknowing. It's a blackout, not knowing anything at all. And then you're dead. The bad news is that it doesn't last. It would be nice if one could simply say, rest in peace forever in a total blackout. You know, all your problems over. That's the wet dream of the materialists. May it be so. May it be so. that you just linger on in other people's memories. In other words, it's their problem. That's a really wonderful, fantastic notion of materialism. I think it's ever so charming. For people who like to live in a fantasy realm, it's probably very comfortable. The Buddhist vision is far more traumatizing. And that is the only problem with death is it doesn't last. Because it shifts from that alaya to then this breaking through to the clear light of death. But if you're unconscious in the alaya, you'll probably be radically disoriented when the clear light of death appears, and it'll be very brief. And then your consciousness simply continues on, out of ignorance into delusion and confusion. So there we are. In this practice that we are returning to this morning, and for which we'll take another step, we're inverting awareness in upon the observer. The lived experience, your actual experience of being someone in here, even when you're not active, even when you're not doing anything, you're just sitting there minding your own business. Just quiet, not doing anything. So you're not an agent. You're not doing, you're just being. And you're being observant. You're being aware. Do you have a sense when you are just aware of being someone in here who is separate from that which you're observing? Is that your modus operandi? Is that how you are present throughout the world? Sometimes passive, sometimes quiescent, just present, observing, but still somebody in here, like a flickering flame, just present, over here, in contrast to all the appearances and objects, over there. So, is there someone really in here who is the observer? That's what we'll attend to. Because the idea of this, shamatha leading to vipassana, leading to dzogchen, is again to cast light where there was darkness, such that even when you fall asleep, we have this little mini-death. I don't think we can call it petite mort in Tibet, in French, because it has a different connotation. But a little death. A little death. And that is every time we fall asleep, the activities of the mind, the five physical senses, the activities of the mind, of thought, memory, and so forth, they collapse right into the substrate. So for most of us, when we're deep asleep, we don't know it. So we're back to square one, back to the beginning of unknowing. But then it's possible to fall asleep consciously, so that when you slip into the substrate, you actually, the light of the substrate consciousness does not get doused, does not get obscured. And so when you fall asleep, deep asleep into stage four non-REM sleep, and you encounter the substrate, you're not simply in cognitive fusion, you're not simply sucked into it in a state of unknowing and then not knowing that you're asleep, but in fact you bring the light of the substrate consciousness to it, and so then you clearly illuminate the substrate and you are then lucidly deep asleep. That's a very fertile platform for entering into lucid dream. And likewise, shamatha practice alone, let alone all of the magnificent stages of practice beyond that, the vipassana, stage of generation, completion, tekcho tertya, all of these, just with shamatha alone, this is quite sufficient as a preparation, if you really go very deeply into the practice, to be able to die consciously, very much like falling asleep consciously, such that when your mind implodes, you lose your mind, you lose your own individual mind, man's mind, woman's mind, and so forth. Or when you lose your mind, you don't fall unconscious, but your mind is actually settled in its natural state by the biological process of dying, such that when you come to that near achievement, that close achievement of darkness, you illuminate the darkness with your substrate consciousness, you rest in the substrate consciousness, and you are dead and knowing it. Dead and enjoying it. You're dead lucidly. And that's a much more high potential platform from which to ascertain the clear light of death, which is Rigpa, than to come from a state of total unknowing, and from that platform to have the clear light of death manifest. That's not a very good possibility. To move from a state of total unknowing, even of your own substrate consciousness, to radically ascertaining Rigpa when it arises. Good luck with that one. But if you are conscious, if your substrate consciousness is clearly, vividly aware of the nothingness of the substrate, and then that breaks through and the clear light of death manifests, well, if you've not only achieved shamatha, but had some Dzogchen practice, a stage of completion practice, that could serve you very well. So, this is not such a trivial practice. Let's find a comfortable position and start exploring who we are. As subtle and challenging as this practice of awareness can be, let's begin each session in our comfort zone, letting your awareness descend into the body, fill the body, settle your body in its natural state, your respiration in its natural rhythm, and for a little while calm the mind with mindfulness of breathing. You may count the breaths if you find it helpful. let your eyes be open, your gaze gently cast downward. Without meditating on anything, without focusing on any object, without doing anything, simply be present. Sustaining the flow of mindfulness without distraction and without grasping onto anything. And as you just sit there doing nothing, it may dawn on you that you are aware, let alone of being aware of this or that, simply that you are aware at all. So rest in that primal knowing, that knowing before you know anything else, before knowing any object. Know the one reality that cannot be doubted. Awareness is present. And let your awareness hold its own ground, resting in its own place, without venturing out to any object, simply knowing itself. Then gently begin the oscillation, the arousal, the focusing, and the inversion of awareness in upon itself, attending closely. Withdrawing from all appearances. And then releasing out beyond all appearances into a space of non-objectivity. Inverting and releasing, inverting and releasing, and gently sustaining the flow of awareness of awareness. Release thoughts as soon as they arise. And then as you invert, invert more deeply into your lived experience of being someone in here who is observing the real subject. Intensely invert, focus, concentrate, attend closely. And then utterly release into the space of non-objectivity, inverting and releasing. As you invert your awareness in upon the observer, if an appearance comes to mind, some sense of you as the observer, attend closely and observe what is observing that appearance, and probe more deeply yet. then release the oscillation. Simply let your awareness rest without venturing outside or probing inside, with no directionality, no vector, no attending to. Just let your awareness rest in its own place, holding its own ground. And knowing itself, ascertaining its sheer luminosity and cognizance. This practice is quite subtle, and in the beginning it can be quite challenging. Padmasambhava says of this method that we just did that while it is presented as a shamatha practice, walks like shamatha, quacks like shamatha, does the work of shamatha, takes you to the substrate consciousness, he said it's possible that by doing just that practice you might break through to Rigpa. In other words, this could do double duty as a shamatha practice and a Dzogchen practice to ascertain Rigpa, pristine awareness. So that's for people with little dust on their eyes. For The rest of us who are wearing mud contact lenses, take a little bit longer. So in between sessions, I'd really strongly encourage you, don't engage in practices that just give you a mounting sense of frustration. That's a really bad habit. Okay? So in between sessions, here we just spent 24 minutes doing very cutting edge kind of practice. But in between sessions, then focus, you know, draw from your strengths, use your strengths. You attend to those practices, devote yourself to those practices that you really find you have some confidence, you can develop your confidence, and most importantly, for which you really see some tangible benefit. Are you becoming more relaxed, more stable, and clear? That's good. And the more, and as much as you can augment your shamatha practices with the four immeasurables, all the better, because that will very well prepare you for wherever you're going when you leave here in 7 weeks. So, enjoy your day. See you later.